The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to the big broadcast. I'm Dave Glover. Joining me, as always, is Rob Washburn. It's Wednesday. It's after six. And this is the time every week when we ask the listeners to consider this. And welcome back. My guest in the studio is Rob Washburn for our weekly installment of Consider This Live. And before we get to the conversation, here they are, Hedgehoppers Anonymous and Good News Week.
Week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky. It's Good News Week. Someone's found a way to give the rotting dead a will to live, go on and never die. Have you heard the news? What did it say? Who's won that race? What's the weather like today? It's Good News Week. Famines shake the need for coal by stimulating birth control. We're wanting less to eat. It's Good News Week. Doctors finding many ways of wrapping brains in metal trays to keep us from the heat.
What's the weather like today?
It's Good News Week. Families check the need for coal by stimulating birth control. We're wanting less to eat.
It's Good News Week.
Doctors finding many ways of wrapping brains in metal trays to keep us from the heat. To keep us from the heat. To keep us from the heat.
And there they are. That was Hedgehoppers Anonymous and Good News Week on Trinity Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. Joining me right now is Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College and my community producer and part-time co-host here on Wednesdays. Welcome back to the show, Rob. I know you've been busy all week long. Now, we have been trying, I mentioned this earlier, and I know that Brian Coggins is trying to do the same thing for his weekend review show on Friday. I don't know if anyone's been managed to get a hold of Ian Angus to talk about this appeals court decision. But I know that you did what you could, Rob.
I really tried today, Dave. I really wanted to get him on to see if he would come on and talk about this court decision. It's a monumental court decision, I think, in a local context, in the sense that this has been a battle that's been going on for quite some time. And it's just fascinating. It would be good to have him, especially because he's both a lawyer and one of the proponents. And he could have helped us understand what it is that the court found that wouldn't allow them to vote in their favor. So, phoned him numerous times today, reached out through various channels, but mm-hmm. He hasn't been accepting calls and not returning calls. So that's too bad.
What can you do, right?
It's true.
And of course, the question that I raised, and again, I mean, I don't know how the Court of Appeals decision came down. I don't know what the full disclosure on that will be, and I know it's available on the town website. But I have to wonder if this was simply a matter of the appeals court not recognizing the standing of Ian Angus and the complainants in this case, the ones who brought forth the case as residents and as legal experts. I wonder if the provincial government, because I know the town didn't accept their standing. Remember, that was their defense initially, was it, well, we didn't think these people have the right to bring this case forward.
I think what I've been told so far, and from the few things that I've been able to gather over the day, I think it also focuses on what is a trust fund. And the rules around a trust fund and whether those are applicable to this kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And those that was what I had heard some of that today. And I don't like to talk about it too much because I don't really have a lot of facts to add. But what does fascinate me, Dave, and I'd be curious as to your opinion on this, is what happens now moving forward? I mean, you know, barring that there's some a legal appeal that can be found in this, I don't know if that's even possible. But in terms of relationships between the former Hope Township and the town of Port Hope, what do you think it's going to mean to those two groups?
Well, obviously the animus is going to remain. There's going to be probably even more now in terms of a distrust between Ward 2 and the municipality. The issue that is alarming to me is this. The money, and this is a quote, the money was to be held, quote, held in trust for the exclusive benefit, end quote, of the rural ratepayers. Now, the understanding that Mr. Angus had and that the rural ratepayers had was that the money would be used to offset, you know, future rate increases that would be inevitable as former Hope Township joined the city, the town of Port Hope, become the municipality of Port Hope. And, of course, the increased costs thereof. Now, the statement from the town is that the money will be used for the benefit of Hope Township. But I have concerns about that because if you remember how the accounting was broken down, a lot of it had to do with works that were being done in Ward 2.
Mm-hmm.
And they took some of the money, well, the money that was spent anyway, was spent to do work in Ward 2. But the question I have at that point is then, well, when did Ward 2 no longer become part of the expenditure budget for the municipality?
Mm-hmm.
Because if what they're saying in their accounting is that, well, we used it to provide, you know, benefits to Ward 2, things like, you know, doing road work and mm-hmm. and much needed repairs in Ward 2. But my question then becomes, well, when did Ward 2 stop being part of Port Hope? Because that money should have come from the municipal budget. That many monies that were spent for a repair work or road work that benefited, quote-unquote, benefited Ward 2, mm-hmm. should have come from the municipal budget, the full municipal budget.
Mm-hmm.
The trust fund, as I understand it, from speaking to Mr. Angus, and even speaking to the mayor, quite honestly, way back when, mm-hmm. when he said this could be settled over a cup of coffee, was that the money was to be used to offset rate increases for Ward 2 residents, and that was the sole purpose of the trust fund. Now, I spoke to a former counselor who said, well, in her opinion, that the money was spent appropriately. And I said, well, was the money spent on anything other than, you know, to offset rate increases?
Yeah.
She said, yes, but the money was spent appropriately because it benefited Ward 2. But I would argue that by benefiting Ward 2, it benefited the municipality as a whole, and that therefore the money should not have come out of a trust account that was to be held for the benefit of Ward 2, but should have come from the municipal budget to benefit the municipality of Port Hope.
Well, you know, this is fascinating because I did an interview on a completely different subject, but I was talking to some people in the former Hope Township about other issues. And one of the themes that kept coming back up as I talked to people was this idea that people in the urban area of Port Hope don't understand how different it is living in a rural area.
Mm-hmm.
And one person even said to me, you know, 75% of the people in this municipality live in an urban setting, and it's their agenda that drives everything. They don't recognize how distinct it is to live in a rural area.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when decisions get made, it's always 100% for the urban citizens and not for everybody. And they don't recognize this rural half. And this is, you know, this is why I was saying earlier, about this decision having creating a greater schism, if it isn't big enough already, between the two rural and urban parts of the town. Because I think when you have that kind of feeling on other issues. We weren't even talking about this. This was on other issues. Mm-hmm. And it feels that deep. Also, the fact that when I was covering the June 20th council meeting, and we nearly had fisticuffs. And the gentleman who was standing up speaking, he became so animated and so riled. He started being disrespectful to the council. He started being rude, demanding the ouster of the two Ward 2 politicians, mm-hmm. Deputy Mayor Burns and I can't think of her name.
Louise Ferry Blesher.
Thank you very much. Saying that they should both resign. And he was so and Robert Polutnick, who was chairing the meeting at the time, told him to stand down, to be respectful. Finally, he sat down. Somebody else got up to speak. They made a couple of comments, and then all of a sudden, the two of them were going at it. And literally, it was like, let's go out in the parking lot kind of talk. And people, there was a recess called. People were escorted out of the building. It was just mind-boggling. If there's that much tension on just simple issues. Mm-hmm. What's this decision going to mean in terms of the future of the municipality?
Well, the next question a lot of people are asking is who's paying for the legal costs?
Well, I understand that Port Hope is applied already for...
Well, they're going to be, according to Sanderson anyway, they're going to be petitioning for costs. But who are they petitioning for costs from?
Well, wouldn't it be the people who filed the case?
So, how can they demand costs though? I mean, I don't understand how they can demand costs unless they're saying that they again, if the appeals decision, if the appeals court decision was that these people didn't have standing, which has been the town's position all along, because you know the problem for the town has been that they don't want to address mm-hmm. whether the funds were spent appropriately or inappropriately. Mm-hmm. They want to address the fact that these people don't have the right to ask that question. And I think that's where the appeals court really failed to deal with the issue appropriately. Yeah.
I don't feel comfortable talking about this, Dave, because I'm not a lawyer and mm-hmm. I don't understand the detail enough that I can make an intelligent response. And mm-hmm. I know a lot lately journalists have been speculating. That's not what I'm prepared to do. I know what I know from whom I've talked to and from my own mm-hmm. experience. But, I mean, that's why it would have been so helpful to have somebody that could come in and start to illuminate all this.
I'll tell you something that would really go a long way in perhaps restoring some of the trust that Ward 2 residents seem to have lost in their municipality. And that would be a guarantee by this council in writing, something that would be locked in forevermore. Because the mayor has already said that this money will be used to benefit the residents of Ward 2. I want that benefit to be clearly outlined. I think if I were a resident of Ward 2, I'd say, okay, well, what does that benefit mean? What does it mean to benefit Ward 2? Does it mean that you're going to offset my rate increases, which is what the trust was set up to do? Or does it mean you're going to benefit me by paving my roads?
Well, you know what? I think something, if I could offer advice to Mr. Sanderson and he was listening, I would say public meeting. Have public consultations, sit down with the residents and say, okay, mm-hmm. moving forward, how are we going to use this money? What is the way that you people feel that it'll be used responsibly? Let's talk about this in a transparent way. I mean, this was the big promise when these guys came into office. We were going mm-hmm. to be more transparent. We're going to be more open than anybody had been previously. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about it. And let's go to these people and, you know, let them decide and then implement that. And I think that would be a huge step forward.
Well, I think the first step before that would be a complete audit of the mm-hmm. of the spending of any of that money. I mean, we've had an accounting, but there hasn't been an audit. And I think there needs to be a full audit so that the people of Ward 2 know where the money went, how it was spent, mm-hmm. and where we go from here. And of course, you know, we've got to focus on how much money is left in the trust and how that money is going to be spent down the road. I think that those are a couple of issues that need to be addressed.
Absolutely.
But I really do believe that if the council wants to win back the support of the residents of Ward 2, including that gentleman who raised a violent ruckus at the council meeting in the latter part of June, would be a commitment in writing, a guarantee that, because again, this council can say anything, but if they aren't voted in next time, then the next council will, you know, can say, oh, well, you know, we weren't part of that council and we're not going to honor that agreement. There needs to be a firm commitment. You know, again, I think this whole thing started when the municipality decided they wanted to get rid of the trustees and the questions weren't asked as to why.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So moving on, we don't actually know where this is going to go. We know that there has been a petition for costs, but beyond that, we don't know. And I think that's part of the problem for the residents of Ward 2. Now, I know you have been busier than a one-armed paper hanger this week. You know, we're going to, by the way, listeners, and I want to point this out because this is something you said, and I want the listeners to hear this. We're going to be talking stories from all over the county, and this really does illustrate the need for more local news. You know, we've got this amalgam now called Northumberland Today, which took in all of the papers, all of the smaller papers in the community publications that have disappeared, but there's definitely a need for those publications.
Well, first of all, Dave, thanks so much for bringing this up, because part of my professional development, I spend time, each summer I go back to Northumberland Today, as I knew it as the Coburg Star, and I work for them voluntarily and try to fill in when people go on vacation. And it gives me a great chance to get back, use my journalistic skills, and also to keep my contacts up within the community, which is fantastic, and also to see what's new in the industry, how things are being done in newsrooms, so that when I go back and teach in the fall, mm-hmm. I've got lots of experience to pull upon as I'm talking to students and giving them advice. So I really look forward to this opportunity. And one of the things that I admire about all the local media is there is so much that goes on, and just how under-resourced local, rural news media, news outlets are currently. I mean, most of the places that are working or trying to cover in the news have one, two, maybe three reporters out there. They do everything from cover stories to doing social media to getting pictures. And they do this on a daily basis. And, you know, we are lucky that we are media rich in the sense that we have numerous outlets that are trying to cover things. The tough part is there is so much news. The other day I put up on my Facebook page, you know, hey, look, I'm back being a reporter. And if you have any story ideas, send them in. Well, I'm inundated. Dave, I go flat out from dawn till the sun sets pursuing stories, and I'm lucky to get three done a day, and yet I could be doing far more. So what I was pleased to do is a number of people have sent me press releases and story ideas. Mm-hmm. So I brought some of those along that I don't think I'm going to get to this week, but I thought, well, you and I could talk about them, and maybe we can set some things in motion. If people know further information or could share information with us, maybe they call us and help us fill in the gaps.
Absolutely.
So the first one that I thought was really interesting was somebody wrote me and said that there's a company called the Canadian Candy Company that's taken over the factory space in the depot formerly known or formerly occupied by Strapex. And I believe that's the building that sits on Division Street at the entrance to the Northern Industrial Park. It's on the north side. Mm-hmm. And the information that I was given is that they think that there's been about 20 people that have been hired. There's been inquiries made to the various bodies, economic development at the town, and they can't seem to find out if there's going to be any release of details. But according to this individual, the factory is fully functional. It has been for at least 4 months. And, you know, what's going on with the town? How come we don't know any more about this? I wasn't too surprised by that, because oftentimes, you know, these kinds of announcements are very carefully orchestrated and mm-hmm. it's done for the maximum impact. But certainly that's interesting. Had you heard about any of this?
I hadn't. I mean, I knew Strapex was no longer there. I knew they had been moved on. By the way, we're talking about the location on Darcy Street, listeners, just so you guys know.
Oh, pardon me.
So we can clear that up. Yeah, no problem. I just went to Google it, and there it is.
Pardon me.
Pulling itself up. But again, it's a great location. It would be great to be able to talk a bit more about the company, maybe get some information about the company, but you weren't able to.
No, well, I haven't been able to pursue it. I just haven't had the time to go after it. What really interests me, though, is that, you know, economic development is so important, and I know politicians, developing the local economy is huge. And so to find out more about this company, what sort of things do they manufacture? You know, it's amazing to find out some of these companies. I know there's a Hershey's plant in Toronto that makes all the Smarties for all of North America.
That's right.
And so, you know, who are these people and what do they make and where do they ship it? And, you know, 20 jobs is nothing to sneeze at. I hope that they're full-time jobs and they're not these horrible, precarious jobs where people get barely sufficient hours. But who knows? Anyway, some really interesting news. I'd love to find out more about that.
Well, and again, a quick search of the net here, and we'll see if we can't find any more information as you...
Okay. So while you're looking that up, another thing is I was out and somebody mentioned to me, have you seen the new Sprucewood building? Again, on Ontario Street, north of the railway tracks, on the north side there, there's a little industrial area. There's a couple of companies in the back, but there's an auto complex on the south side of the road, right across from Kraft, where Kraft used to be, the old Kraft plant. And Sprucewood Handmade Cookies has built a 4,608-square-foot location at Ontario and McGuire Street. And they did this about a year ago, but I don't know if anybody's been up to see this, but this building is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it's really aesthetically pleasing, and yet they make cookies, which they ship out all over the place. I don't know if anybody remembers this, but in 2010 in the Vancouver Olympics, they were the official cookie for the Olympics. At the time when the building was first being built, they talked about hiring 8 to 10 people in full-time jobs, which again, you know, that's good economic development news. There's a baking space. There's also a retail outlet. And again, it's really a beautiful, beautiful site. But again, amazing piece of economic news to be followed up on.
Absolutely. And by the way, folks, I'm just doing the old interweb search there. The Canada Candy Company in Cobourg, currently hiring. They are hiring right now. They're looking for machine operator, maintenance, general labor, and sanitation workers, for those of you that are interested in looking for work. And by the way, these jobs were posted, according to the website, a day ago. So if you are looking for work... maybe you want to think about the Canada Candy Company located at 740 Division Street in Cobourg. This is the first I've heard about this group, and I know that Rob has talked about it. We know that economic development is huge in this town. And, there's no other information I can find online about the company other than what I've given to you already, but we will try and keep you up to speed as we get it, that's for sure.
Now, another story that was sent to me that I'm not going to get time to fully cover was the upcoming BioBlitz by the Willow Beach Field Naturalists. It's coming up this weekend. Mm-hmm. So there are some highly trained biologists, skilled naturalists, and fascinated members of the public are going to meet to discover what hidden biological gems can be found in Northumberland County on July 8th and 9th. This is the first annual Northumberland BioBlitz, which will be launched at Peters Woods Provincial Park in association with the Willow Beach Field Naturalists. Now, Peters Wood is just north of, not Cold Springs.
I think it is just, no, it's not called Cold Springs. Where is it? It's because we're talking about up division,
In Alnwick Haldeman.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a few clicks north of the highway, basically.
Yep. And you know
on,
what?
On 45.
Camborne.
Is it Camborne? Yeah, I guess maybe
it is. No, it's not Camborne. I'm sorry. Isn't this terrible?
Harwood?
Nope. It's more central than that. Terrible, terrible that I didn't get that
folks.
Detail.
Yeah, wow.
Didn't do my homework before I came. Oh, this is terrible. Anyway, surrounding the lands are managed by the Northumberland Land Trust and the Nature Conservancy of Canada. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be lots of opportunity for photography. Now, a BioBlitz is two events in one. It's an intensive blitz and guided blitz. The intensive blitz involves biologists and highly skilled naturalists who survey a specific area to record species diversity. These experts are divided into taxon groups, for example, birds and mammals, which are two obvious groups to study. And then these groups can sometimes be divided even further into more specific groupings, such as nocturnal birds, small mammals, to examine areas, and even more intensity. I hope that's somebody going to tell us where Peter Woods is located.
I hope it is.
Anyway,
go ahead. I'll try and get the call.
Sure. And the guided blitz is all about connecting with the general public to the fantastic work that the biologists and naturalists do in the field. Many people have been on a nature walk or read a book about animals, but to understand how a study is conducted is sometimes something we don't actually get to experience. So the Northumberland BioBlitz starts at 10 a.m. on July 8th and finishes 24 hours later at 10 a.m. on July 9th, rain or shine. The Peter Provincial Park. Guess what? It's south of Roseneath off Highway 45 along County Road 29.
There we go.
So, Good thing we figured that out. Boy, yeah, I'm a journalist, sure. Anyway, that's great. So something that I haven't had a chance to write up, but I think is a really fabulous news story.
On that note, we're going to take our break here. When we come back, more of the stories that are struggling to be told. That's one of the best ways to probably put it, eh, Rob?
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Don Murdoch. I'm very pleased to be hosting Country Music Through the Years. The show comes to you Monday nights from 7 to 9 p.m. right here at Northumberland 89.7. During this fun-filled 2 hours, we'll be featuring songs from your favorite classics like Merle Haggard and George Jones on to today's artists such as Luke Bryant and Blake Shelton. Looking forward to interacting with you each Monday night from 7 to 9 p.m. on Country Music Through the Years right here at Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Well, the washer quit again.
Well, I don't know what to do with it.
Well, I do. If you need in-home service, new or used parts, previously loved appliances, advice, or stimulating conversation, come on down to Ed White Appliance Service, 51 Mill Street South, or call us at 905-885-7109, where we love to say, yes, it is worth fixing.
This is Allison Houston from Port Hope Public Library, your destination for inspiration, imagination, and information. Summer's here, school's out, and there's lots of free fun at the Mary J. Benson branch of your public library. The library launches the TD Summer Reading Club with Tim Holland the Puppet Tamer on July 4th at 2 p.m. and rounds out the summer with a comic magic show by Peter Meany on August 24th at 11 a.m. Family activity days run Tuesday mornings at 11 a.m. featuring Canada's birthday, pet care, bird watching, and stargazing. Spend a quiet Wednesday afternoon enjoying a movie matinee each week at 1 p.m. with Lego Batman, Belle, and the Boss Baby up on the big screen. Everyone's invited to the library Thursday mornings at 11 a.m. for a family story time and craft. Each week, children can get crafty at the Garden Hill branch with new activities each Wednesday afternoon, and on July 26, fire engine exploration with the Port Hope Fire Department. Any student that needs some extra help with reading, French, or math can benefit from the summer tutoring program. For details about programs and other library information, visit www.phpl.ca, call 905-885-4712, and find the library on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Missed one of the programs on Northumberland 89.7 or want to hear one again? It's as easy as going to the podcast section on our website where you can listen or download your favorite show. It's all at northumberland89.7.ca.
And welcome back to the broadcast. My guest in studio, my co-host, Wednesdays, the night we ask you to consider this, Rob Washburn is my co-host and also our community producer. And Rob, you've got another story that isn't being told.
Well, I got a tip from, a suggestion from an old high university friend of mine who is living in Florida now. And she writes me and says, the effect of the Trump presidency on Canada. So many Canadians tell me it does not matter what happens is happening in the USA, but I think it has many far-reaching implications. You could pick one each week and have a series of articles. And I thought, wow, that's an incredible idea because, you know, you hear lots of people talk about the Trump presidency and absolutely fascinating. I was reading some Pew Center surveys done about the standing of the U.S. in the eyes of other countries and almost across the board. Many countries, the citizens now have a poorer opinion of America as a country and of the presidency itself.
Well, they elected this guy, right?
And no kidding. But in terms of that sort of global community that was being so touted, global free trade through the 80s, the 90s, 2000s, even to today, you know, we still talk about global trade. But if people don't respect you, are they really going to want to do trade with you? Are they really going to want to be partners in armed conflict, et cetera, et cetera. So this America first, this isolationist policies, what does it mean to Canadians? So again, I'm curious if anybody's listening and has an opinion on the Trump presidency, please call in. We'd love to hear what you have to think. I was going to go do a streeter there yesterday for Independence Day and just couldn't get out from behind my desk because I was getting so many calls and the stories that I was working on.
Well, I was speaking to someone on Twitter about this because this has actually been something that's been quite active on Twitter, people talking about this. And I remind people quite often, you know, a democracy like the United States, first of all, I've been told by many people on Twitter, America is not a democracy, it's a republic, whatever that means. But, you know, you've got to remind people quite often. I mean, Donald Trump won, first of all, he didn't win the popular vote, which everybody knows. He got the Electoral College vote, but he won by something like 7% of the vote. I mean, he got 53%, I think, ultimately, and Hillary Clinton got 46%. Okay, but one of the things we need to remember is that 47% of eligible voters either didn't or were blocked from voting. They had their rights denied. So you're talking about splitting just over 50% of the voters. That's what he got. So realistically, Donald Trump was elected president of the United States by about 27% of the American people, which oddly enough is roughly what his support numbers are at about now. 27% of Americans still think Trump's doing a good job. That's his base, listeners. So when people around the world say, oh, America, where have you gone? What have you done? Oh, my God, I can't believe you. I always say this. You know, you got to remind people that the majority of the American public don't support this guy. So, you know, for the people around the world to say, oh, America, you really, you know, you disappointed us. It wasn't America. Okay. I mean, they've got vote rigging going on down there. Right now, he's put a guy in charge of voter integrity, a guy who has single-handedly disrupted the voter integrity in 36 states, the electoral commission that's been set up. And they want every state to give them every name for every voter in their state so that they can put them on their cross-check list. I mean, this is just another avenue for them to be able to purge millions more people from the list. I mean, we thought 47% was a high number. Wait till the next election comes around if they get away with this.
I mean, incredible.
And people worry about Russia.
Well, incredible invasion of privacy. I mean, you could never have anything like that happen in Canada because there's the privacy commissioners from the various provinces would be protecting your rights.
Well, even the electoral commissioner as well, the commissioner at Elections Canada said.
Absolutely. It's a completely different system. But to think that they were going after parts of people's social insurance numbers, your political affiliation, your voting record, all this kind of information, which I know that political parties often track this kind of thing, they have their own systems of gathering that kind of information. Still, I mean, to be going after this kind of information, it's not a surprise to see that many of the states attorney generals and secretaries of states for each of the individual states have said, you know, go away, we're not going to be sharing this information.
And it's funny too because a number of Republican states have already said that they've told them to go away, but at the same time they've handed over that information. So I mean, the states, here's the difference between Canada and the U.S. another difference: the states are sovereign states, right? I mean, it's the state attorney general that will register the vote, right? They're the ones who approve or disapprove of the vote. So it's the sovereignty of the states. So the rights of voters in those states is protected by states' rights. The federal government doesn't even have access to that information, and that's for a reason. Something else alarming that happened yesterday, just before we go to the break, I want the listeners to let this soak in. A lot of NPR yesterday, National Public Radio.
Oh, I heard about this.
They broadcast the entire U.S. Constitution online yesterday for Independence Day. Well, a lot of people got mad at NPR for doing that, saying that they were tweeting, that they were putting out propaganda, that they were saying that this was just lefty lunacy. And what they failed to realize was that this was the U.S. Constitution.
So what they were doing is they were tweeting sections of the Constitution, 140 characters at a time, and they were sending out these tweets, and people were responding with great vitriol saying, you know, this is propaganda, how can you publish this kind of stuff? And meanwhile, it was lifted directly out of
Well, they had somebody literally reading the U.S. Constitution.
It was, but it was tweet by tweet by tweet, and I think it just brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
And, of course, the right wing, the Donald Trump supporters out there, and these were self-confessed Donald Trump supporters all over Twitter, Facebook, saying, and that NPR was just a leftist propaganda. And
these would be the first people to tell you, you know, oh, we've got to protect the Constitution, and the Constitution is such an important document. We have to follow the Constitution. Yeah,
well,
right.
Well, one guy even tweeted out the fact that the Constitution could be it could be amended by any government, but it can also be eliminated by any government. And that's the fear that I've been broadcasting about for years now, because because the GOP currently have just under 2/3 majority across the country. Once they get their 2/3 majority, they can literally rewrite the Constitution in their own image. We'll be right back, listeners.
Get ready to sing and snack. Downtown Coburg presents the first ever Food and Music Festival. From local restaurants to popular food trucks, there's a meal to entice everyone's taste buds and music to delight everyone's earbuds. Join Storm the Palace, the Jade Eagleson Band, the Offbeats, the Wilderness, and Bon Jovi Tribute Band Keep the Faith as they provide the sound bites for the one-day event. Join us for the Food and Music Festival, Saturday, July 8th, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. in downtown Coburg. 8 blocks of awesome.
When it comes to computers and the internet today, it's hard to know who and what to trust. When something goes wrong, you could call your daughter, your brother-in-law, that kid who mows the lawn, or you could call Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professional. Computer Solutions, located at 208 King Street East in Colburn, is open 6 days a week. They have ample parking and convenient hours, plus you can arrange to have your system picked up or dropped off right from your door. Call Computer Solutions today at 905-355-3622 or stop by their store in Colburn at 208 King Street East. Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professionals.
Want to learn about radio and have fun working with a group of dedicated and enthusiastic people? Consider volunteering with us. To find out how, go to info@northumberland897.ca.
Charge.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Well, Rob, I know you want to talk about the beach, so let's do that, the Coburg Beach.
Yep. I was down on the Canada Day long weekend doing some coverage and noticed that the beach was, again, the water was pooling along the beach. A lot of the real estate was gone, and there were substantially less people than you would imagine for a Canada Day long weekend. Mm-hmm. And so I got on the horn on Monday and started doing some digging around as to what was the impact, trying to determine how it was affecting tourism, and talked to quite a number of people, including the Ganaraska Region Conservation Area, who is responsible for looking after the efforts by the town to rebuild the beach. So what had happened was, the week before Canada Day, 7 metric tons of sand were brought down to the beach. There was a grader down there. They spread this all out in the hopes that that would mitigate the pooling of water and drive back the water line further out, so that there would be beach space for people to come on the long weekend.
Right.
Well, then we had, if you'll recall, I think we had a record rainfall on the Friday. It rained for several days, but on the Friday, I think there was 4 inches, or about 100 millimeters of rain fell in one day, and that's when we had the big flood up at Elgin and Division Streets, and you know, you could have literally built the ark. Anyway, with all that being said, the town's mayor, Gil Brockenier, said he wasn't overly worried at this time, as long as the beach was able to dry out before the Sandcastle Festival on the long weekend in August.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't particularly worried about any impact on the businesses. And while, yes, the beach canteen would be affected, and some of the other business might be temporarily affected, overall for the summer, he wasn't too concerned. What I found fascinating, though, was in talking to the Ganaraska Region Conservation Authority, who are monitoring water levels and the rainfall, et cetera, fascinating to learn that all the factors that affect water pooling at the beach, it's not just the rain. It's high pressure, low pressure.
Mm-hmm.
The winds, there's some schools of thought that say Lake Ontario is like an ocean, and the winds that come across can push water up and saturate the beach. It's absolutely amazing. And then I got told, and this just blew me away, that the dam down by Cornwall, that they can actually increase and slow down the flow of water from the Great Lakes into the St. Lawrence. That control dam is opened so wide that twice the amount of water that goes over Niagara Falls was being released per second.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to drain it down, and it could go at that rate for a week, and all it would do is drop the entire lake lake shoreline down 1 centimeter. Yep.
Well, I know that the Americans, there were three state governors that had asked that dam be opened, mm-hmm. so that they could deal with the high water levels, yep. in those states. So again, it's controlled by us, right?
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, fascinating, Dave. A really interesting interview, but also, you know, the whole question of the state of the beach and how it's going to impact tourism over the summer is going to be obviously one on a lot of people's minds. So, totally fascinating. Anyway, I understand we have a phone call.
Yeah, we got a call. We got a call calling from the Bandshell, actually, because, of course, today is July 5th. Coupe de Ville opens the Canada 150 Summer Music Series today. So got a caller from there. Welcome to the program. How's it going down there? Is this Kale?
Yeah, it's Kale Crow here.
Welcome, Kale. And now you're going to be playing August 2nd, I understand.
Sorry, say that again?
You're going to be playing on August 2nd.
Yes, I am going to be playing here on August 2nd. It's at 7 o'clock. I'm hoping for weather as good as it is out here today.
I can bet, yeah. Tonight it's Coupe de Ville.
And it's Coupe de Ville going up. They're going to be giving us some oldies but some goodies. And, we already have a crowd forming down here. But we really couldn't have asked for a better day for this.
No, absolutely.
Definitely. But
absolutely.
These guys are about to go on in about 2 minutes, actually.
Oh. So. All righty. Well, you called just in time then.
Yeah, exactly. But I think they're calling me up. I got some more responsibilities to handle.
You're the MC, that's right. So,
yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Kale. Thanks for calling. Thanks for the reminder. We'll let the listeners know. Grab your lawn chairs, folks, and your loved ones, and head on down to enjoy Music in the Park, part of a wonderful 150 Canada Summer Music Series presented by Northumberland 89.7. This is our third or fourth year doing this, Kale. Do you know?
I'm not sure, actually.
I think it's our third or fourth thing.
I think so.
Big shout out to Jim Matthews, who sort of got the ball rolling on this for us a couple of years ago. Thanks, Kale. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Take care, buddy.
You take care as well.
Another great local news story.
Another great local news story. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I want to thank the listeners for tuning in today as well. Taking us out to the top of the hour is Hedgehoppers Anonymous. Head on down to Victoria Park. By the way, thanks to our corporate sponsors, Cameco, Vandermeer Toyota, and the town of Cobourg, as we celebrate Canada 150, part of the Canada 150 Summer Music Series tonight, kicking it off with Coupe de Ville. Here are the Hedgehoppers Anonymous.
It's Good News Week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky. It's Good News Week. Someone's found a way to give the rotting dead a will to live, go on and never die. Have you heard the news? What did it say? Who's won that race? What's the weather like today? It's Good News Week. Famines shake the need for coal by stimulating birth control. We're wanting less to eat. It's Good News Week. Doctors finding many ways.